The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
Hey, I am your host. I am Valerie Kirkgaard. What a heck of a way to start off our 23rd year on the radio. Deb, you've been on the radio with me for what, about 5 or 6 years? Something like that?
I'd say 3 or 4.
3 or 4? Let's see how much.
I don't know. It's more like 4.
It could be.
Oh, no, so, the years keep going by. So cool.
They do, and the conversations keep getting better and better and better, I'll tell you.
Well,
we've covered a lot of distance here, you know.
That we have.
So Debbie and I are the doctors for money, and we made this commitment, 3 or 4 years ago. I'll take Debbie's because it makes me feel a little younger. 3 or 4 years ago, we made this commitment that we were going to do whatever we could for the American people to take advantage of the financial situations that were available to them. And now you're listening to Waking Up in America, and we like to create radio dialogues here on issues that matter. And if your money and your finances and your credit and your mortgages and your sanity don't matter, I don't know what does. So you want to ask a question while we're on the air, send me an email at val@wakinguminamerica.com. Once again, that's val@wakinguminamerica.com, and I'll actually ask your question on the air. How about that? I think that's pretty special. Oh, my God. I've got thousands of unanswered emails, but I will skip to the top of the list so I can see yours when it actually comes in. So that'll be a delight. Now, as I said, we've been doing this show for 23 years now. We started out in 1987, and we've hit some pretty interesting topics, but there is no more interesting topic than the one I came across, I want to say 20 years ago, and that was secure party creditors. We'll tell you more about that as the show goes on. Basically, what it was saying was that the American people had a right to funds that had been set aside in our name, but we had no information or access or knowledge about, and I found this very intriguing. I heard many stories, some of which were rumors over the years. A lot of things happened, but it wasn't until Debbie called me, I think it was in April, wasn't it, Deb? Like that? And told me about Tim Turner's class.
It was in May.
May, and when I went to Tim Turner's class with Debbie, I saw that what had been missing before for me was finally in place, like the actual tools with which you could discover your wealth and what the possibilities were. Prior to that time, it was a lot of people being upset that they had been ripped off, with good cause, I might add. I was asked at that time to be the head of their radio station, and I declined because I didn't see anything but danger in the horizon when I looked at this thing, because I didn't see the tools to operate it. From the moment I met Tim Turner, Tim, I told you were my brother the moment I met you. It was like, and then we would order the same things at meals and stuff like that. I thought, I think this is destiny. So Tim had a lot of very interesting information, and you can go to his website at americacanbefree.com and find out where this guy gives seminars. And what he's doing basically is he's creating maritime bankers. Am I correct in saying that, Tim?
Basically, that's what we're doing. We're creating national banking associations, which is basically, according to the definition in Title 18, it's basically, and Title 12 and Title 31 of the code, we are private bankers, part of a national banking association, simply because in 1933, under the new laws, when they changed and took the gold standard away under the HJR 192 and several executive orders, our private property and even ourselves was mortgaged to finance the national debt, or refinance the national debt at that time.
Don't you think the national debt, in my opinion, was in the national debt partially created by the 12 families siphoning off the money?
It was completely created by them and the Congress. And that's what they've done, and they have done
Because it kind of sounded like we'd helped create the national debt, and as far as I can see, we just got sucked in.
We were brainwashed, basically. We were brought into this, drawn into it, out of ignorance, honestly. And through a lot of, under FDR, there were a lot of law changes in 1933 through 38, as I've given you copies of the book, Dulocracy in America, which actually is coming out in print shortly.
Oh, great.
I talked to Rick Potter about that just a few weeks ago, and it is being printed now. We'll be out for the public, the new version of it, the updated version is coming out.
Well, you know, I want to just... To get this show started off, I really would like to do the Pledge of Allegiance, and one of the reasons I like to do the Pledge of Allegiance is it actually has the two words in it that I like a lot, which are Republic and God. Well, actually, there's a number of words I like a lot, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all. Mm-hmm. So if you would join me, all of you, in doing the Pledge of Allegiance, I'd like to actually take us back to a time when we were actually still sovereigns, and the Pledge of Allegiance actually reflects that time. So I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And I'm Dr. Val Kirkgaard, and in 1984 I carried the Olympic torch. So today I still carry torches for different things that I think are really important. Sidious Altius Fortius, swifter, higher, stronger. That's what everybody that shows up on this show about. Our guests reflect these values and come from all fields, from Dennis Kucinich to Senator Alan Cranston to John Denver, Willie Nelson, and the list is just absolutely magnificent over the last 23 years, including Larry Hagman. Bob Sercosta says we're doing, the Home Shopping Network says we're doing radio that will change the world, and you know what? One radio show at a time. That's what I'll tell you, Bob. Thanks for the comment there. Now, a lot, you've heard from the Doctor for Money, you've heard a little bit from Tim Turner, and, you know, a lot of bankers are getting really bad PR in this particular economy, but I just happen to have in my hip pocket the good banker. So, Armin Walker, would you like to introduce yourself?
Good afternoon, Val. good to be with you today.
I'm sure, I hope I didn't embarrass you, but... Armin has the same kind of desires that Debbie and Tim and I do, and that's that the American people should be liberated, financially liberated. And this is about the pursuit of happiness. You know, that's one of the things that we've been promised is the pursuit of happiness. And I really see that by learning the ins and outs of this Secure Party Creditor thing. And I was talking with Tim this morning, and Tim, you were saying this process that I had been noticing over 20 years, that the paperwork to actually make it work has actually only been around the last couple of years. Is that correct?
Yeah, the enforcement part of the paperwork has only been around. So we resurrected an ancient law form, basically, when I was studying the code back some time. It's been several years ago.
When did you get started?
I've been in this since about 1994, probably, 95.
Different
levels. Well, actually, what happened is I had some friends that tried to introduce me to it back just about the mid-90s, maybe 94, 95, and basically I told them they were crazy. Honestly, it took them quite some time to get me involved. It took 3 years for me actually to get involved in the process. I started learning a little bit about it, but I wasn't convinced. The first guy that introduced me to it was pretty much a charlatan, so I was real cautious about that, you know. And it sounded too good to be true, and that's been my experience. If it does, it probably is.
Right.
And so I was real cautious. But one day a senator called me and talked with me.
What did the senator say?
Basically, he told me we got to talking about this process, it wasn't really a process then. It was just an idea. And I basically told him, I said, I believe you've lost your mind, basically. Not very nice to him. And I said, I don't believe a word you said.
You mean a senator told you?
Yeah,
about
he talked to me about 2.5 hours on the telephone, and I told him I don't believe a word of it.
Can we say what his name is?
No, I'd rather not.
Okay, I'm going to get you drunk.
Yeah, I'll tell you in private. I don't want
to put his name
out on the airwaves. No, he might not appreciate that. But anyway, he told me that it was true, and I told him, I said, I don't believe it. He said, well, I could prove it. And I said, I don't believe that you can. He said, well, what would you do if I could? I told him, not only will I do it, I will teach other people about it. I said, but I don't believe that you can prove it with the law. I said, I've got to see it in the law, black and white. And he sent me a book. That started me on the name of the book was called Volition. And it was put out, it's been put out for many years, and a number of authors.
Like V-O-L-I-T-I-O-N?
V-O-L-I-T-O-T-I-O-N, Volition. And it was a compilation of laws and congressional documents that showed actually that what he said was absolutely correct. And that got me started. It didn't finish my research by any stretch. It just got me, it was scratched the surface. And I began to get into the law and study it. I said, if this is true, then we need to know how to do it. Well, I searched the country for a number of years trying to find somebody that had a process to do it, and nobody had one. And so we were doing a number of things, but we were kind of floundering out there in commerce and didn't understand how to do things. And so I sat down and I spent 2 years working 6-7 days a week. I would go for months without a day off, working double shifts, and went into the law and I fleshed it all out and put together a process where people could actually do what the idea was. And it's changing and it's improving all the time, and it's a living process. It doesn't stay the same. It changes from time to time, which we've learned
day to day sometimes.
That. Yeah, and we've learned that. We've learned that you can't just set down a certain procedure and expect it to work all the time, because it'll work for a while and quit, and then you've got to find another way. Because
well,
we're dealing with the human element.
Let's tell people what this process provides, because though we've mentioned the process, we haven't actually mentioned the benefits.
Well, basically what the process is made up of is the laws that and procedures that we use to go forward and become national bankers, a part of a national banking association. And in the law, Title 12, if you can go read the 1979 annotated Title 12 of the United States Code, is probably the best description of what we're talking about. If you can read that, it just lays it all out on the table, everything. Okay, but basically what a national banking association is, and it is defined in Title 12 as five or more natural persons whose business is to issue notes in commerce. Well, we got studying that, we found out that the law supports, because that Congress in 1933 through 38 created laws that took our private property without our wishes, that we found out that there are many Supreme Court cases that said, well, Congress, you've got to give these people a remedy. You can't do that. You cannot. The 14th Amendment does not allow you to take someone's private property without their permission or just compensation. And so the Supreme Court stepped in and said, you've got to give the people a remedy. So they created a remedy, and that remedy was to allow the people who were part of a national banking association, which it means five or more natural persons, whose business it is to issue notes in commerce, gave us the authority to issue notes just like a bank to discharge debt. Now, it was not used, you couldn't use it to purchase. That was not ever legislated, that I've ever found. But you can discharge debt with it.
Hmm. So, Armin, as you're listening to this and most people think bankers are like this elite group that are separate from them. How intrigued are you by this conversation?
Well, admittedly, when you invited me on the show today, I took a peek at the resolution, and I reacted like you reacted to the senator at first, and then
good.
I read it again. And then I pulled it off the internet in a different location to get just the straight reading, so I wasn't no annotated version. And yeah, it's interesting. It's eye opening. And banking is it's often more an issue of confidence than anything. But this is an eye opener, and I'm listening and reading and very curious. It does smack in the face of some of the things that I've thought about banking, and I've been a banker since 1979.
Now, Debbie, you were in a financial background before you were introduced to this material. In fact, you and I went and learned some interesting facts on grants and things of that nature. Not my background in particular, but yours. So was this as hard for you to assimilate as it was for myself?
Yeah, for years I heard little things about things like this. I'm like, there's no way. And then literally 2 years ago, I started learning, or maybe it's three now. These years run by. I started learning about a lot of international commerce and really things that are going on worldwide as far as money. And I never understood money before. And when I started hearing about that and then this came up, it was like just the rest of those light bulbs just started going. I've been living this stuff day and night, searching, researching, reading code. I feel like I've become a lawyer.
Why don't you tell them how many times you've been to court and what's happened so far this year?
Well, I've been to court quite a few times, and I tell them that they don't have my consent to do things, which they tend to ignore, but then we think the results are still that they're not getting anywhere.
Well, the funny thing about what you just said, and I think you guys will be a little amused about this, I divorced my dear husband, Lon, like in the early 1980s, and he has a second wife, Kura, that he's been married to for 28 years. But at Christmas time, I found myself talking to them like a secure party creditor. And what I said to my husband, I said, I never gave up the right to ask for your advice or claim your affection or anything else of that nature, and I want to be clear about that. You do not have the right to do anything other than love, honor, and cherish me, because that's what I've done with you. And he says, I know that. That's why I've been so good. But I never would have spoken like that, because one of the things we do when we go to court is we tell the attorneys and the judges that they do not have the right to do certain things, that they do not have our permission. So here I was, hearing myself talking laughingly to Corinne Lon, saying, you do not have the right to do anything other than love and cherish me, because I never gave that up. You know, I gave you the space to marry the woman you loved, but I did not relinquish the other vows. So you can't take them back, because I'm not offering them. And everybody laughed. Like, I felt so confident, and that's what happens, is that this process builds confidence when you realize that what we really are is we're all extremely rich. What would you say we're worth, Tim, that when we access our accounts? What's the average American worth in your, to the best of your knowledge?
Well, right now, I would say that the American people are probably worth in the billions.
Each person.
Yeah, and we've done an assessment of 397 million American. They're at least worth at least hundreds of millions, because there's 397 million Americans. Half of those possibly may be of legal age.
Do you have to be of legal age to do this?
Yes, you do. You have to be of legal age. You can't make contracts until you're of legal age.
Oh, until 18? Or 21?
Well, whatever the legal age of majority.
Well, you can die at 18.
Age in your state.
You can die at 18 for your country, but I don't know if you can drink till you're 21.
Yeah, you can. In some cases you can't. But the average American is worth millions and millions of dollars. We know that there's at least $82 trillion. In the CAFRA funds that are still left in America. And
what is that word you just used?
Trillion.
What is CAFRA?
CAFRA, that's the... If you'll go to your city or your county and ask for the financial report, they'll give you a copy of what they call the budget. The budget is not the financial report. You want the comprehensive annual financial report. The CAFRA funds are all the overages on the tax monies and the things that they collect from the
public. What do you mean overages? You mean they get more than they need?
Overages. Oh, yes. They all get over more than they need. You know, when they talk about the budget, you know, we've got a $1 billion shortfall in the budget.
Yeah.
You need, just go down there and tell them you want a copy of the annual financial report. And they actually cut checks and put it in these funds periodically. Not sure what the time period is they use. Probably different places. But periodically, they take their overages and they put them in these accounts. And these accounts are called layered trusts. And each administration, every 2 years, if you've got a county board, it's, they elect part of the new board every 2 years to keep from having a full board change every 4 years.
Would that be the Board of Supervisors or the actual board of the city?
Whatever they call it in your
city
county.
Council.
They call it county commissioners in the south. Some call them aldermen in cities. It varies all over the place, whatever they call them. But whoever the leaders, the political leaders are in your area, your town or your county, they have a layered trust, and all the overages that come through that's left over from the budget, between the budget and the annual financial comprehensive financial report, is placed into these CAFR funds, they call them. Okay, and their layered trust, they go all the way back to the 30s. And we had an accounting done last year by a gentleman that's a part of a big accounting firm. And he came up with $82 trillion in the CAFR funds that were available right now to the American people. Well, I don't know if you know. Armin, you probably know a lot more about finance and money than I do. And $82 trillion broken up between 389 million, that's quite a bit of money per capita, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
I think Armin's boggled. Are you boggled?
Yeah. And then you have the $27.5 trillion in Europe that's part of the WANTA, Leo WANTA Fund.
What is Leo WANTA?
WANTA was he was a Secret Service agent that worked for Ronald Reagan, and he is the guy that went over and created false entities in Europe and brought down the Soviet Union financially. And in
really?
The process, he made buku bucks. And right now, talked to a friend of mine, and these funds are held in several banks in Europe, and right now they're estimated at about $27.5 trillion. Well, you add that to the $82 trillion to the $27.5 trillion, American people are very wealthy.
So who's the inheritor of the funds? I mean, if that man created them when they blunted
the people.
Oh, it is We the People.
We the People.
So he created those funds for the U.S.?
Yes, and he won't send them back. The first installment that he sent back when Bush Sr. was president was stolen by Bush and Clinton. $750 million was routed through the Children's Defense League Fund, which is Hillary's private fund, and ended up in their private bank accounts. And so WANTA said, I'm not going to send any more money because all you're going to do is steal it, and this belongs to the American people. And as a result, he wouldn't transfer any more funds, and they can't because they don't know how. He's the only one with the numbers.
So he's still alive.
Yes, he is. He's still alive, and until we get an honorable group in the Treasury, he's not going to transfer the money back.
Now, I don't know how many of our listeners know. I mean, the Treasury isn't even our Treasury, is it? I mean, doesn't
it works for the International Monetary Fund, basically?
No. Now, you said when we were I know you got all a little bristled when we were standing out in front of the United Nations flag up in Oakland. Would you like to say a little bit to the American people here about the United Nations and how all the International Monetary Fund and how that all fits together?
Well, basically, all of the people that work in Washington work for the UN and IMF. That's who they work for. You know, we elect congressmen and senators, we think, but actually they don't work for us. They work for the corporation, United States, and we've talked about that a number of times, how that the Washington is simply a corporation. That's all it is. It's called the United States. It is a corporation. It's incorporated in Delaware. Well, that corporation operates the other corporations in America. All the cities and the counties and the states are part of that subsidiaries of that corporation. So this whole thing is nothing but a big conglomeration of corporations and subcorporations. And Washington, D.C. is owned by the International Monetary Fund. It was
and who comprises of the International Monetary Fund?
Well, that's the basically the world bankers, the top world bankers.
And we're talking about the top 12 families here? Are we talking about somebody else?
Well, I'm sure that's part of it. I don't know that that's all of it. But, yeah, I think that they probably control it. But it's owned by a number of countries and a number of different groups, I'm sure.
So
but anyway,
the
they
Nation.
Own Washington, D.C. They own the District of Columbia was deeded to them back in 1944 through the Bretton Woods Agreement. And so we don't even own the seat of our government. You know, what's wrong with that?
Well, it's obviously not the seat of our government. So maybe there's nothing wrong with it.
could you imagine the Soviet Union deeding Moscow to a foreign country or a foreign entity?
Well, you know, when you're talking about all of this stuff, and Deb, I don't know, you're probably learning a lot here too. I thought that about three-quarters of the Congress were attorneys, and that attorneys are actually pledged to the English.
Now they are. They're.
So they're, we're not even just working.
Well, the Bank of England is one of the key banks, so you got to understand that.
Okay, but aren't all of our attorneys then foreign agents, basically?
Yes, and they're legally required to be registered under the Foreign Agents Registration Act, the FARA Act, and most of them are not. I don't know any of them that are, but they're required to be because
they
are
actually
foreign agents.
Do they know they're foreign agents?
I don't think a lot of them probably don't.
I know one that does.
Some do.
I called up one of my friends, Larry, who's an attorney, and I said, I want you to be a double agent. And he put on his English accent and started laughing. So he knew. But I'm on the air right now with Armin Walker, Doctor for Money Debbie Ringchop, Tim Turner of America Can Be Free. I'm Dr. Val Kirkgaard. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back, and we're going to finish off this wonderful saga and tell you about Accepted for Value.
More alive with possibility than ever before in history. Yet it is easy to get lost in the confusion and chaos of such an accelerated world. How do we stay connected and aligned with the unlimited potential that lies within us and soar in these exciting yet challenging times? Diamond Alignment, a sacred technology for the 21st century, offers high-speed connection and alignment with this divine power within, both convenient and profound. The 6-minute multi-sensory diamond experience, delivered via the internet, clears your mind, relaxes your body, and creates inner peace no matter what is going on around you. The Diamond Alignment experience effortlessly keeps you charged with joy and equanimity and greater focus and clarity throughout your day. When you experience the expansive energy of Diamond Alignment, you activate the unlimited wealth and potential.
How perfect. Thank you very much, Jacqueline Joy. I really like Diamond Alignment. It's a divine transmission, actually, a divine frequency. And people that listen to it for a while, they feel themselves relaxing. When the show has been rather heavy and heated on a couple of occasions, I could tell the actual difference in how people sounded after Diamond Alignment had played. So if you go over to our website at wakingupinamerica.com, I want to tell you just a little bit about what's happening there. Today's show will be posted later. You'll see last week's show on there that says what the guests are. You'll see a picture of Debbie and myself and Gail Ellen. There's a cool video about validation, a fable of how, about the magic of validation, and you'll like it. The guy's one of the doctors from the Bones show, and he does a really good job on validating people. So if you need any validation, you got 2 hours free validation over here at the website. I love Nick. He's the guy that has no arms and no legs and a great personality, and you can watch a video on him there. You can archive our past shows. What happens is we broadcast live at noon on Wednesdays, and then about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we actually go into the archives. So today's show should be in the archives between 3 and 4. And when you go to the website, you can actually go to the archived radio shows, and we'll be in there. It's all very nicely organized back to about 2005. Scale further down the page, and you're going to see President Obama walking his water dog. And he's walking on water, and the dog's in the water. It's really cute. So it's a good website, but a lot of people don't get to the bottom. Okay, so you want to scroll down to the bottom of the page. because there you see a race for the rainforest, and you go in there and you can click on the rainforest race, and you can actually pick marine wetlands, American prairie, or rainforest, and you can actually save 7 square feet of that. Now, in my case, I get to do this once a day, so if you go in and try to use mine, you'll actually have to sign up for that. I think you get rather turned on about it. It's a thing you can do for free, and you can do it over the years, and gosh, I've probably saved a few acres by now since I've been doing it all this time. Sign up at our newsletter, and you'll automatically receive a 6-month listing in our Green Alliance Business Directory, which is forming right now. There's a little girl there encouraging you to check out breast cancer cures, and the sponsors are at the bottom of the page. If you just need a vacation and you want to run off to Mexico, a great place for you is Puerto Vallarta, and you drive 45 minutes north from there, and you end up in San Pancho. And Steve and Diana Cooper are there, and they're waiting for you with these charming bungalows about 2 blocks from the beach. The diamond alignment that you were listening to, that wonderful tone, I actually got Jackie to agree to let me have it be on the website. So if you click on that, you can actually listen to that tone in the background. And if you want to sign up for it, you can then play it. It varies, and you can play it 24 hours a day. Want really good mailing list? Stardust. These guys are great. Some of the best response I've ever got has been through Stardust, because they've got 100,000 people that really care about the condition of the planet and things of that nature, so they're very responsive to the people that are listening to this show and the interest there. So when you call, tell Raw that Val sent you, okay? And Stardust's number is 828-665-0411. That's 828-665-0411. Steve and Diana in San Pancho are 971-239-4120. That's 971-239-4120. And just tell them Bell sent you. That's the magic word here for the discount. And we all like discounts. So go down a little bit further, and you see Willie Nelson's song, Whatever Happened to Peace. He gave that to us here at Waking Up in America to play, so you can download Willie's song and listen to it. And thank you so much, Willie, for the Koning Company and for sinus and ear problems and tightness in the neck and shoulders. Click over to the Koning Company and check that out. This 5,000-year-old process is around for so long because it works, okay? Directed breath, you can actually clear out a lot of your emotional field. If you're clinging to the past, you can call and check out. You can go to drvalerie.com, or you can call me for a free consultation at 310-455-8623. Now, we said we'd finish off what we were doing there, guys. I want to talk a little bit about accepted for value after you finish your thoughts there, Tim.
Yeah.
What are you thinking here?
Well, accepted for value is just a different kind of order to the Treasury to discharge your debt.
Now, did you get a chance to read it?
No, I've not. I've not had a chance. I couldn't get it open.
You couldn't get it open. That's not good.
I'm rebooting now, trying to see if I can do that. I do know about the accepted for value, quite a bit about it, and it's an order for payment, basically what it is, and it explains to them that they're supposed to. To go through our private offset accounts. It was interesting, the other day I got a letter from a guy from AT&T that AT&T sent him, and it said he had sent a payment accepted for value, and they sent him a letter back telling him, thanks for your payment. We have discharged this through your private offset account with the U.S. Treasury.
So did he send that to the CFO of AT&T, or did he send that to the IRS?
I don't know. I'm not sure which way he sent it, but he got it, a letter back from AT&T.
He sent it to the IRS and then got an unexpected letter from AT&T saying it's from the prepaid Treasury account.
Yep, from his prepaid.
Do we have a copy of that?
I have a copy.
I do.
Will you send me one?
Sure. Actually, I've heard that there's 4 or 5 copies of different people getting those letters now.
Oh, please, send them to me. I want to be able to prove it to people, because wouldn't you say the biggest thing here is, you guys, when we go to tell people about this, they go, no way.
Of course. That's been my experience, and I was the same way, and I don't blame people for being
skeptical. I don't either. I say to them, look, I expect you to get something don't expect to get something in 2 or 3 hours. It only took me 20 years.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's a problem we have a lot of times, is that people are impatient.
Well, you know, part of the deal, though, is the tools to do it really didn't exist, did they, Deb? I mean, you know, it's only the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, mm-hmm. You wrote the maritime liens existed before.
Of course, they've been around for hundreds of years, but they
were not
used.
Would you tell our audience what maritime liens are?
Maritime liens came about during the shipping industry. Goes back probably to the 15, 1600s. They're part of a maritime law, a procedure to secure property that was considered cargo of vessels. And with a maritime lien, you could place the lien and keep the cargo in port until it was resolved, and that's why they were created, because if once a ship sailed and left port, there was not much you could do with it. So it was created for that purpose. And so what we did is I found out that in studying the law in 1966 that our country, because of the, and this gets into pretty deep stuff, but basically what they did is they created an all capital letter entity to represent the American people, and which is a vessel.
The American people are considered a vessel. I just want to
in commerce, we are vessels in commerce through the all capital letter name, and I've explained that. I explain all this at the seminars in detail where
right.
You can understand it. For the purposes of the radio show, it's not possible.
Right.
It just takes too long. But
yeah.
Because we were represented as an all capital letter name vessel, capitus minimus diminutia, that means that our status was minimized by capitalization of our name, and that's the legal quote, phrase that's used to support
that. When you say
that.
Minimized, I mean, I've seen documents in which we're talked about like we're cattle.
Basically, yes, you are. And you are referred to by the United States Treasury as human capital. That's what they would call you. That's the term they use for us as human capital. And we are traded just like our birth certificates are traded securities. That's what they are. That's why we have so much wealth, because, like I said earlier, the Supreme Court said they had to give us remedy because they took our wealth. And so they had to give it to us. And that was, there was no, in our system of law, you have to, but back to admiralty law, I realized that in 1966, when they brought admiralty on the land, is what they called it, under Title 28, Rule 1, it states that the laws of admiralty apply in our courts. And I don't think Congress realized that one day we would figure this out. They opened a hole in the law, a loophole in the law, big enough to drive the ship through, as you might so speak.
Well said.
And so we have learned how to use that. And we found that, you know, and Debbie has been doing this recently, and she's seen the power of it. But, you know, nobody knew how to do it, so I developed a process to use it for an enforcement tool, this law that they created. I don't think that when they created it, they realized that this would happen.
You thought it, well, they didn't know about the Internet because it hadn't been developed yet.
Right.
And all of the things in which people would communicate. I mean, this was a well-buried secret, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So, but not from the bankers, not from certain bankers. Armin, we know you're a good banker, okay?
Oh, yeah, sure he is. He's a good
guy. Are you still there, Armin?
He's talking to us.
Armin Walker, are you there? I think our good banker has...
I am here, too.
He's searching for the mute button.
That's right.
So, Armin, I just want to check as we proceed here. Are you learning anything new today?
Well, yes, it is. It is rather interesting. And, yeah, I'm learning quite a bit. And I do have one question for Tim.
Mm-hmm.
When you say the loophole in maritime, maybe what do you mean by that? What are you saying?
Well, basically, when they brought admiralty on the land, I don't think they realized what they were doing. In one sense, is because they actually gave us, as real persons, the authority to take control of the vessel, and as part of all that. And I don't think they understood that.
What made them do it?
Well, it was done to save the country primarily back when it was done, because they had realized that they were enforcing. unlawful law on the people is the reason they did it, because they were bringing us into this what we call the straw man category, enforcing straw man laws against real people. And as you know, the doctrine of parity, we've talked to you about all that, that's not allowed. That's a tenet of the law. You can't violate those natural laws. Men are men, vessels are vessels. You can't tell a man that he's a vessel. I mean, the law doesn't work. Corporations in parity, they have to deal with other corporations. Just as if, as I've explained in our seminars, my computer can only interface with other computer or other devices that are capable of interfacing, that are equal or have parity with my computer. You know, my computer can't interface with a chair because it's not equal. And that's the same way the law works. The law works basically the same way. And so a vessel and a man are not equal. They're not compatible simply because of the doctrine of parity. God is the ultimate creator. He created man. Man created government, and government created corporations. So a man is higher ranking on the list of natural hierarchy than a corporation. And you can't get parity between the two because it's simply not possible to do that.
But they tried really hard.
Well, and that's how they did. That's why they brought the Admiralty Law on the land, so that they could give us the all capital letter name and make us responsible. What they didn't think at the time is that we would figure it out, that we were not vessels, that we were actually people, and there was no parity. And so that flies in the face of these courts. And as you said, I've told you many times, I've been through here in Alabama. I've been through 11 federal hearings. 11 times, and I've won 11 times, and I'll win 11 more if we go.
And what
because they simply can't get parity. There's no provision in the law for them to do it.
And
that's because of the law change in 1966.
And what people need to recognize is that maritime law supersedes equity law.
Yes, it does.
And that's what he's saying in another way. The law of men supersedes the law of the corporation.
Absolutely. Because men are superior to men created corporations. Okay, it's to make people understand it better, you can use a military ranking system here. Can a private tell a general what to do in the military?
Not if he doesn't want to be court-martialed.
That's right, exactly. And neither can anybody under the general. A colonel can't do it. A major
Billy
can't
Mitchell,
do it.
Who we were talking about today, was actually a general telling the government the truth, and so they busted his rank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much what happens to people when they try to tell the government what to do.
Yeah, that's true. Happens quite often.
So, Debbie, I know, Tim, that Debbie and you have had some pretty interesting court cases this year, and you've gotten a maritime lien. Would you like to mention that to our listeners?
The maritime lien I have in place is for $27 billion against a federal court, a judge, 11 attorneys, a bank, and a communications company. And we're going for collections. Actually, I just hired the collector to start collecting on this week. And we're going to collect. They can't stop us from collecting, basically.
How does the collector collect?
Well, first thing we're going to do is go after their bonds. Then we'll go after their bank accounts and their retirement funds and anything else that's available. We'll go after their homes and their yachts and their airplanes and their toys, and we'll take care of everything they have, basically, because they violated the law. And
except you do leave them their dog, as I recall.
Well, I don't want their wife, kids, or their dog.
So that's really, I want to acknowledge you for your kindness there.
Yes, I you know, you got to feed them, and I don't want them.
So, Debbie, you've been in court quite a bit in the last couple of months, and you have a lien out yourself, but you're at a different stage in it.
My lien starts in a week.
Oh, your lien starts
in a
week.
I'm at the last stage, right before putting the liens in.
Mind you, these liens just don't get slapped on while nobody is noticing. How many times have you let them know that they needed to do certain things or you were going to go to the next step?
Well, I sent them 20 registered mail letters warning them not to do this.
And how many have you sent, Deb?
Well, so far, let's see, they originally were notified in October, and then since then they've had 5 formal notifications to every party that says your first notice of fault, second notice of fault, final notice of fault, judgments. They're getting all kinds of notices.
Is it okay if I mention who this company is?
Probably not a good idea. I just get.
I don't know whether it's a good idea or not. Tune in next week because I'm going to mention their name. I hate these people.
Come on now. We don't hate anybody, Val.
I'm sorry. I'm not totally transformed yet. I'll be more transformed after I've seen them pay the bills for some of the crap they've done. I have a lot of research that I've done on this company and how it treats people, and it treats people worse than cattle. I think they're kind of about in the ant category. Cattle, you at least have to leave space for them. But these guys just step on people and then clean the bottom of their shoes. So this will be very satisfying. So that maritime lien... Well, now Tim has got the right mechanisms put in place for you, right, Deb, so that you can actually follow up. And you were mentioning that there's a Central American bank that's going to be collecting these liens too?
Well, we have a number of people interested. But, the Central American bank just approved one of our notes to monetize it, actually. I got the call yesterday, and they said that they've checked the note, checked the information, and it's absolutely okay. And they can do it. They have to do it against, what they do is ledger it as an asset against a line of credit, and then at maturity they present it to the U.S. Treasury for payment of the line of credit, and you can use the line of credit.
What is the maturity on the bonds?
Well, I'm not sure. It depends on what you want to do. We make them as small as 180 days to 12 months, a year. We do them 5 years, 10 years, 30 years. Depends on what the bank wants.
Well, you know what I like.
For any amount of time.
You're talking about the bank, right? Like that bank over there. Now talk about the bank that we're creating because we got tired of fighting the system.
Well, we purchased the bank, as you know. We got some partners together, and we bought a bank. And that's something we're working on now, putting that together. And we're going to make it a bank of the people. We're putting together now the paperwork to sell limited partnerships in the bank so everyone will be able to participate in the bank.
So we can buy in with a bonded promissory note?
No, you can't. not yet. Maybe in the future. Not yet. Let us get our feet on the ground.
I thought that was pretty quick and fast. I was ready.
Yeah, there you go. You're not. That's not original, though, believe it or not. But anyway, we've got to start off with regular funds as we do. And then once what we're going to do is invest in gold with the funds, and then we'll have some real hard assets to back. Of course, we do have bricks and mortar a certain amount. You know, we do have the building and the property, but we want to have have some backing in gold with the bank, and that's
one
of the things we want to do.
One of the Indian banks is all gold, as far as I know. Did you hear about that?
I'm sure they've got plenty of it.
Yeah. I know one of the Indian banks is returning to the gold standard. Are we going to be on the gold standard?
Actually, yes, our bank, we intend to be on the gold standard.
And our bank is also going to help people access these funds, right?
Yes, and we do believe that we do have some access in Europe where we can actually monetize some instruments, but that's a little premature.
Okay, got it.
You've got to go through... Get the procedure in place first, and
so with accepted for value, I want to make sure that we let people know that you said that they can't pay off, they can't buy things with it.
Right.
Before we close off on the show, and we're getting near to the end of it, you can pay mortgages, you can pay credit cards, you can pay school loans, you can pay property taxes, you can pay
any type of public debt.
Any type of public debt. So people tried to buy cars with it, and they got in trouble. But if you owned a car for 6 months...
Well, I've seen some of them get away with it, but I wouldn't recommend it.
If you owned a car for 6 months, or if you were buying for 6 months, could you then write it off as a debt?
Well, you know that the one case that we just won was the Ed Waller case. You know about that one, I suppose.
I don't, actually.
I didn't have any. Well, Ed Waller just won a case on the 24th of November. He had 32 counts against him for purchasing with instruments, and he actually won in a trial by jury and was acquitted on all 32 charges. There were three people acquitted. Each one had 32 counts against them, and they were acquitted, and they dismissed with prejudice all of the charges.
Which means that you can't come back after him again.
Well, right, they can't bother him anymore about it, but the bottom line is he did use this process to even purchase.
Really?
And he was acquitted, yes, but I don't recommend that.
I know you
but
don't.
See, they, you know about they that, evidently like... had something to back that up, because the jury saw it their way, and they acquitted him of all charges, and they were using instruments to purchase.
You know, my friend Neil sent me a copy. Neil was in our class in Oakland. He sent me a copy, and maybe you've seen it, Deb, of a 1966 or case where the judge and the banker actually got together, and the judge said that the money wasn't even real, so that they couldn't really persecute him because they hadn't given him real money. Have you seen that one?
I haven't.
I'll see if I can find it. But then they wanted to appeal the case, and in those days to appeal the case, it cost $2. So that they brought in two paper dollars and gave them to the judge, and the judge refused to accept it because it wasn't money. And he said that if they brought in two silver dollars, he would have accepted it.
Well, what year was that?
Like 1966. I can find the stuff.
The judge was in violation of HJR 192 then, because he can't designate what type of currency.
Well, he did, let me tell you. And, by the way, they never came back to hassle the guy. They were trying to foreclose on him. And his argument was that they had never loaned him any money in the first place. But it wasn't from the point of view that we're talking about. It was because the money wasn't real. It was only paper.
Absolutely. It's all paper, commercial paper.
So we just got a couple minutes left on the show. Deb, any questions or comments?
Not really. I mean, I know this accepted for value is working for a lot of folk, and the bonded promissory notes that we've written, even though the courts are not sure how to play it out, we're still finding that they seem to be working. And even a friend went through a grand jury case, and everything was just suddenly stopped when it looked like the she proved her case that they were trying to throw that she couldn't do the bonded promissory notes, and all the jury was listening to her so intently, all nodding their heads. She brought in 232 pages worth of proof, and they
had Janet, okay?
Pieces of paper.
You go, Janet. Janet, this is for you. One of the most auspicious women on the face of this earth. Armin Walker. Are you there? Do you have a question or comment to round off this wonderful time?
Just a very interesting program. I think that looking into it and sharing more with people would be one statistic, though. I think $82 million was the amount, Tim, that you'd mentioned earlier. And if there's about 200 million adults, that's about a little under $500,000 per person.
It was trillion.
It was trillion.
But 82 trillion, I believe, because that's a lot of people to divide by. But I don't
know how many zeros there are in 82 trillion.
I think there's like 12 of them.
Hey, you know what? If there's 12 of them, then there's more than 500,000 a person. No kidding.
There's way more. The real point is that there's a lot of aspects of law and government that people may benefit from if they learn more about, and their lives might be made a little easier by the outcome.
Might?
Yeah,
I am so sure of this. I have thrown my whole life behind this. What can I tell you? I'm pleased to be here. Tim comes on the first Wednesday of every month. I told him today that I expected him on forever. He didn't flinch. We all like each other, and we're all well enough intrigued with what we're doing, and always getting new information and finding more ways to help people. I just got an email that said that somebody was sending me 600 angels. I I think we could turn everybody into financial angels here. I think this is a terrific thing. You've been listening to Waking Up in America. This program has been brought to you by the Golden Hearts Foundation in association with Kirkgaard Media, our radio partners, ConingCompany.com, Mona V, Max GXL, Dr. James Murphy in Memoriam, and thank you to the team at Voice America, and to you, Mike, and to Ben Migan for our theme music, Almost Ordinary People. Next week, invite a friend to listen, and remember, accept for value, and you can do that in your friends and in your relationships and with your bills, too.
Ordinary people with extraordinary plans. We're almost ordinary people here. Hear the music, feel the dance.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on voiceamerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.